Now, don't use my name if you catch 15 fish and you're limited to 10. If you catch it, it won't do any good to use my name. In fact, you may double the fine because he knows you've been taught better. When we've been studying the relationship of Israel to this mercenary soothsayer, semi-prophet named Balaam. And when you finish the 24th chapter, it looks like Balaam departs and goes home, and the whole thing's over with. But it really isn't, because in the first three verses of the 25th chapter, you have a disaster happen to Israel. And I've tried to wrestle with how in the world to present this on the overhead, and I haven't really come up with anything overly objective. So I'm going to try to feel my way along. I want you to catch what happens, and then I'm going to show you why it happens and the result. In the first three verses of 25 of Numbers, you have Israel moving from fornication. Now, when we say Israel, that means there has to be individuals involved, and they move from that to idolatry in one fell swoop almost. In the first two verses, there are sort of five steps down, or actually in the first three verses, the first two verses, five steps down. I want to show you those. And Israel abode in Shittim, which is merely the plains of Moab on the east side of the Jordan River. And they're at the end of their 40-year journey, and it's very tragic that this would happen right at the terminal point. But they abode there. They're getting ready. Actually, what's happening is little time is elapsing, and Moses is going to die. But before he dies, this event happens. And the people began to commit whoredom. Now, the word whoredom is simply a cal infinitive of zana, which is the normal word in the Old Testament for fornication. They began to fornicate. This is reaffirmed in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 8. And it appears that the men only were involved in this, even though it says the people. And they committed this fornication with the daughters of Moab. Okay? So in verses 1 and 2, there are five steps down. Five steps down. It's bad enough to get involved in fornication. Let's just take them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The first one is, in verse 1, they begin. You notice that? And God's going to catch it very early. I think that's why you have this construction that you have in Hebrew, this verb with the infinitive. They begin to commit fornication. The males are involved. Males plus Moabite females. Now, what happens is that the male is going to lose his control in this matter to the Moabite female, as we're going to see in the next verses. Verse 2. And they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. What you miss in the King James is, and I guess in any translation, make the they female in, I don't know how they would in New American Standard. Is there any distinction of the they there in the New American Standard? Well, in verse 2, the they called is feminine. The verb is feminine, meaning the female called the people, and you have the same word for people as you have in verse 1. The Moabite females called the Israelite males unto the sacrifices of their gods. Okay? So the second step down is that the tragedy is that the male Israelite follows, is the idea. The female Moabite, okay, to pagan sacrifices. Now, this means that they are going to go through the pagan ritual associated with this heathen religious feast. And that is not as innocent as it appears. Let's just keep reading. And the people, notice this expression again, did eat and bowed down to their gods. Okay, so they did eat. They partook of the pagan feast, verse 2b. Male Israelites partake of the feast to pagan deities. Okay, they ate the meat sacrificed to idols is the idea. The fourth thing, as we said, then they move a step farther, verse 2c, and they bow down to these deities. In other words, male Israelites worshiped heathen, pagan images. Okay? The fifth thing is a sort of a summary statement, and Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, which is a way of saying that they then went over, they went all the way, and identified in a very, very realistic way. The word joined himself is simply a niphel, it's a reflexive stem, meaning they did it themselves. They participated in the action, and in the results of the action, it is a reflexive stem. And the word means to fasten to or to couple together. So male Israelites fastened themselves. Maybe that's not the best translation. Maybe we could say identified would be a good expression. Identified themselves with Baal Peor. Okay? Now, Baal Peor, Peor is a mountain. This is a high place. And Baal is the major, we could call him the major deity, the major male deity. He is the major male deity of the Canaanite and Phoenician fertility cult. Now, I don't know how much we've said about Baal before. Baal is a very common name for this deity in the ancient world. In nearly every fertility cult, there emerges some local major deity, and I guess you could call them a deityess. Is that a proper term? A female deity. Is that a good word? Deityess? Not too good. Okay. Female deity. You always have a male and a female counterpart because there is normally sex among the gods which produces whatever kind of an offspring. And depending on the locality, you would have one emerge as the stronger, or maybe the strongest. For example, among the Romans, Jupiter was looked upon as the god of the heavens, and you will often see him holding a thunderbolt. Zeus among the Greeks, and always a counterpart in the female reign or realm. This is because within the pagans' concepts of deity, there was always some concept of fertility. Okay? Now, Baal is the major male deity of the Canaanite fertility cult. And Peor was simply the mountain among the Moabites where Baal was consistently worshipped. They would have their regular grove and all the images directed toward this kind of worship. He was the god who was in charge of good health, of well-being, of the family, of the home, of the field, of the flocks, and of the herds. He was also the storm god because storms were associated with rain or with crop success and so on. And always, as we said, among the ancient world, maybe we should put some of these down. Here would be sort of an ancient fertility idea. Fertility deity. In among the Canaanites and the Moabites, you would have the male here and the female over here. You would have Baal, and over here you would have Ashtoreth. Okay? In Rome or in Italy, you would have Jupiter, and over here you'd have Venus. In Babylon, ancient Babylon, Babylon, you might have a name like Bel, B-E-L. Well, let's put it down. B-E-L. And over here you would have Ishtarte, from which our word Easter comes. In Greece, you would have Zeus and Astarte, or Astarte or Aphrodite, from which we get the word what? Really, the sex. Aphrodisiac, yeah. Okay? Okay. Now, the worship of those deities was always associated with sex. So that if you went up on Baal Peor to worship Baal, and you were male, you would have sex with a female priestess who was also somewhat of a prostitute in a religious sense, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? That's hard for us to see it that way, but that's what it was going on. And if you were a female and you went, you would have sex with the male priest, who was a male prostitute, so to speak. Okay? This was part of the pantheon worship, and this was what Israel got involved in, or these males in Israel got involved in at the plains of Shittim just before they were going to enter the promised land. Okay? Now God catches this very early. He's not going to let it go on too long, and the rest of the chapter is going to tell us what God does about it. Okay? Okay. But in reading that, it looks just like, in Numbers, it looks just like it was something that happened. It was just something that happened in the course of the events, only it really wasn't. It was the doctrine of Baal, like you put at the head of this lesson, and that's what I want to show you. Okay? Point two. This, that is point one, was the doctrine of Baal, or Balaam, I'm sorry. Did I say Baal? I meant Balaam. If you read it, if you just read in cursory through the story, it looks like that Balaam has gone on home, but he really hasn't. In fact, he's going to die in this thing. All right. Will you look at Numbers? Let's see. Chapter 31, verse 16. Numbers 31, verse 16. Okay, what you have in chapter 25 is this historical thing happening, and then God putting a stop to it by bringing a plague. And then God tells the children of Israel, okay, it's time that you take care of these Moabites. And the way you're going to take care of them, you're going to wipe them out. And so in chapter 31, they begin to wipe out the Moabites. And in the middle of that chapter, in verse 16, you read this way, behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam. You see that? The children of Israel, through the counsel of Balaam, to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, and there was a plague among the children or the congregation of the Lord. The counsel of Balaam. Now this word that is translated counsel is the normal Hebrew word to speak, or the verb form is the normal Hebrew word to speak. And when you speak what? What comes out of your mouth? Pardon? This is what comes out of your mouth. What is this? Debar, and debar means what? Words. You see? Or you put the words together and you have doctrine. You have counsel. You have teaching. I'll repeat. When it says the counsel of Balaam, it literally says the words of Balaam. The bar of Balaam. Now to whom, in that passage, it looks, you could possibly interpret the passage to mean that he counseled the children of Israel. Oh no, that isn't who he counseled. He counseled Balak. Okay, the king of the Moabites, and we do not find that out until you get all the way over to Revelation chapter 2. So, just keep this 25th chapter marked. And go to Revelation chapter 2. In the midst of Jesus' final message to the churches, which comprises Revelation chapter 2 and 3, he speaks to the church at Pergamos, and he has something against them, and one thing is mentioned in 2:14 that relates to this matter that we're dealing with. I have a few things against you, because thou hast there that hold the doctrine of Balaam. You are chronologically 1,500 years removed from the person of Balaam, and you still have his doctrine around. What was his doctrine? He taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication. And you have the doctrine of Balaam summarized there. Okay? The doctrine of Balaam was to compromise morals in the name of religion. To compromise morals in the name of religion. And the religion was pagan. Okay? But you notice also in the passage you have the line of the teaching. It went from Balaam to Balak, and most likely from Balak to the daughters of Moab, and Balak was the king of Moab. And from there to the males of Israel. Okay. And this was effectual. Here is this pagan king, Balak, who had hired Balaam to curse Israel, couldn't get the job done, but he succeeds in getting the males to degenerate, to fornication, to going to the idol feast, to committing more fornication, and to finally attaching themselves to Baal Peor and all the paganism that is associated with it. You know, Baal, do you know the name Hannibal? The last syllable as B-A-L. Hannibal means in the favor of Baal. Baal was a very, very common, ancient, major deity. In the British Isles, there was a worship before the Angles and the Saxons got there even. Very, very similar to Baal worship in Canaan. Okay? Okay. Any questions so far? We have no, in the chapter, you're not going to have any condemnation of the women. The women weren't involved, apparently. The Israelitish women apparently were not involved. You're going to have the 24,000 men die. among the Israelites. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a pagan religion, see? And God can't curse Israel. But he has to put a stop to this kind of thing. And this was Balaam's final advice. You see? This is Balaam's final advice to Balak. See? This was going to bring the judgment of God. And sure enough, it did. It brought it quick. But there are over 600,000 fighting men there, only 24,000. Well, only. Only. Okay? It is one big sickie. I'll guarantee you that. It is sick. You see, when you read statements like the iniquity of the Amorites, go not by the highway one to go up to the land because the iniquity of the Amorites is not full. I'm going to lead you this way, and you lead them, and 40 years later he's going to say the iniquity of the Amorites is full. Wipe them out. And it seems like God is very vicious. But when you find out what went on with these people in the name of religion, you find out that it wasn't too vicious. They even sacrificed their babies. And while they were sacrificing their babies, the women would have orgasm in front of the image where their baby was screaming, being burned to death. Now you just imagine that. It's a very, very evil situation. And the Apostle Paul is going to give us some things that go beyond Baal, beyond this deity. We'll talk a little bit about that if we have the time. Okay? So the doctrine of Baal was his final advice to Balak, and it involved getting the male Israelites to fornicate and to get in. And see, the point of the fornication was not... The women weren't just involved in fornication. They wanted to get these people involved in their religion. And Balaam is wise enough to know that God cannot tolerate that. So, verse 4. Back to 25. Now, what you have in the rest of this chapter is really what Jehovah does about the situation and what... the Israelites themselves do about the situation. So we're now back, point 3, to Numbers 25 and verse 4, Jehovah's action. It's Yahweh's action. And the Lord, well, we read at the end of verse 3, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Now, really, you've got 24,000 people involved, but it looks like it's against the whole nation. And you'll notice that, let's just keep reading. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads, which means the leaders of the people, and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said to the judges of Israel, the Shamati, apparently in every tribe they had already set up men who like these elders that were helping Moses, and they probably had subdivided or responsibilities meted out in terms of handling situations, so it wouldn't get all the way to Moses. Take these judges and the ideas from every tribe, and slay ye every one his men that were joined unto Baal Peor. Okay? So we have actually public execution by hanging. Hanging is not the nicest thing to see. Sometimes the neck gets snapped, sometimes it doesn't. But the net effect is not very nice. The sphincter releases and the bowels relieve themselves, and the person smells like terrible, and his tongue hangs out and his eyes are popped out like that, and that's the way they die. Little demonstration. Yeah.
I don't know. It's a kind of just a special, I guess, and it's public. It's very, it's in the sun, of, in the light of the day, you notice, in the light of the sunshine, a daylight hanging where everybody will see it. It's probably some kind of dramatic object lesson to discourage that from happening again. And it apparently was very effective. Until you get to Ahab. And when you get to Ahab, now listen to this. When you get to Ahab, Ahab makes the worship of Baal a state religion. You can imagine that. But it's very effective here. Okay? And the responsibility to do this was in the hands of men, just like the responsibility to do it is today. Okay? In terms of capital punishment, somebody has to push the button. Every Christian ought to be willing to push the button if they have to, in terms of capital punishment. That's what happened here. And they had to hang these guys publicly. Now I think the next part, the next paragraph, verses 7 through 15 is there to dramatize the seriousness of this, to show how bold one can be in this type of situation. And it's the story of a guy who takes one of these Moabites and just brings her into the camp of Israel. In other words, he doesn't go up to the mountain or the hill or the grove to commit his whoredom. He does it right under the nose of everybody. Verse 6. And behold, the King James says, one of the children of Israel. Literally, it says, an Ish of the sons of Israel. An Ish is a what? A male individual compared to a female. Remember Adam says, we'll call her Esha, woman, because she was taken from Ish. So an Ish of the sons of Israel. It's very specific. In fact, his name is going to be mentioned. He made it in the scripture. Came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses. And in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Here you just had these guys hung and their tongues are hanging out and it smells like all horrible and their eyes are popping out. Here comes a guy along with a Midianite woman right through the camp. Taking her to his tent. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation, took a javelin in his hand, went after the Ish of Israel into the tent, and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. He just did them both. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And those that died in the plague were 24,000. There's a 24,000 die. This is verse 9. And in 1 Corinthians, I'm going to put this down. There's a reference to this in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 8. And it says there that 23,000 died in one day. Now, this is the kind of thing that people jump on and say, see, there's a big mistake in Scripture. He just said 24,000 die, and this says 23,000 die. See there? It's 1,000 off. Well, it really isn't what it says. What Paul says is 23,000 died in one day. If they hung 1,000 people, then that took more than a day to get the job done, most likely it did. So it's possible you could explain what Paul is talking about is 23,000 died in one day, 1,000 more were hung. It took a little longer to do that. It is very possible in Hebrew to change a number with just a little diacritical mark, and it's possible that the scribe could have changed the number very, very simply, and then that mistake could have been repeated in time. But this is not a contradiction. This is not to say that that's a contradiction. Okay? The Lord said unto Moses, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, hath turned away my wrath from the sons of Israel, while he was zealous for my sake among them, and I consume not the sons of Israel in my jealousy. Wherefore say, behold, I give unto him my covenant of peace, and he shall have it, and his seed after him, even the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God, and made atonement for the children of Israel. And the word covenant, of course, means a contract, and Phinehas becomes the high priest, and that carries on all the way down until Eli in David's time. Now the name of the Israelite that was slain, even slain with the Midianitish woman, was Zimri, the son of Salu, a prince of a chief house among the Simeonites. And the name of the Midianitish woman that was slain was Cozbi, the daughter of Zur. He was a head over a people and of a chief house of Midian. So socioeconomic status had nothing to do with who was involved in this. These people were of royalty. Now, you finally have the conclusion of the matter from divine viewpoint, or what God is going to command in the matter, in 25 verses, the last three verses, verses 16 through 18. God is now going to command that the Midianites be destroyed. Vex the Midianites. Smite them, for they vex you with their wiles, wherewith they have beguiled you. Now here's Balak, who has followed the advice of Balaam. He followed the advice of a mercenary soothsayer, and he succeeded somewhat. But now he is going to get it in the neck by following the very fool that he followed. They vex you, wherewith they have beguiled you in the matter of Peor and in the matter of Cozbi, the daughter of a prince of Midian, their sister, which was slain in the day of the plague for Peor's sake. So the command is to smite Midian. Or Midian and the Moabites would be the same thing. Okay? Now this takes place, I'm sorry, Midian this is. This is consummated, fulfilled in Numbers chapter 31, the whole chapter. And we won't have time to look at that now. The Israelites go up there and they spare a few and they bring them back to the camp. And Moses says, what did you spare these guys for? Take every female that has ever had sexual intercourse, the only one to save, or the virgins. Kill them. And they wipe out, I don't know, 16,000, I think it is, of the Midianites. Okay? Yeah. Most likely an offshoot of the same group of people. Not necessarily the same people, but of the same family. You almost have to say the same family, yeah. Question? No. The public execution was of the leaders, the heads, the male leaders of, in other words, if there were an outstanding person that were involved in this thing, then they would be hung. The rest were died by the plague. But, and we aren't told what the plague is. This is about the fifth time we've had this so far in the Old Testament, and we're not told what it was. Okay? In the smiting of Midian, you also have the death of Balaam. When you finish chapter 24, it looks like Balaam is merrily on his way home. Well, maybe he is, but he's not going to make it. Numbers 31 again, and verse 8. I'll read verse 7. And 8. The Israelites pursued the Midianites, Verse 7, they warred against the Midianites as the Lord commanded Moses, and they slew all the males, and they slew the kings of Midian beside the rest of them that were slain, namely Evi, Rechem, Zur, Hur, Reba, five kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. That is repeated again in Joshua chapter 13, and I think it's verse 22, where he is called, remember, a Kesem, a diviner, a person involved in demonism, divination. Judges, was it, did I say Judges? Joshua. Joshua 13. And verse 22. Balaam also the son of Beor, the soothsayer, which is really the word Kesem, which means a diviner, an occult, a person involved in the occult sciences. Him did the children of Israel slay with the sword among them that were slain by them. And that ends, of course, the story of Balaam. But there are a number of references to this happening in the Bible. And what? Yes, question. No, that's right. I think that he's just another one of the pagans, and I think it's just kind of an indicative of it. And it also kind of closes the issue, because if you ended 24, you'd think Balaam was gone, but he wasn't. He was very much involved in what happened in 25. And that's why he's included in that list with these Midianites. It's very important that he be there. It was really his counsel that had caused this to happen. Well, what I'd like to do is give you some notes that I just have called Beyond Baal. Beyond Baal. What was involved in this, in these pagan concepts of worship? Was it just an image? Was it just an idol? Was that all that it was? Well, let's remind ourselves that Baal Ashtoreth, Baal Ashtoreth, make sure I got that spelled right, worship was demonic, licentious. And this was not non-typical, this was typical of pagan fertility cults. Now you can imagine what that would do to a family structure, how that would affect the family structure, that kind of a concept. Very, very destructive to any type of cohesive family relationships. Now what Paul says, see, the Apostle Paul says, in effect, beyond the image or the images associated with this, beyond any type of image worship where there are images involved, are demons. Maybe we should say beyond the pagan images are demons. Okay? Let's look at that for just briefly, okay? Will you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10? This is in a context where the Corinthians were tempted to be involved, or maybe had invites socially to be involved with the pagan ritual, okay? And so somebody would bring up the issue, well, what about being involved in the pagan ritual? Is there anything wrong with it? After all, we know that there's only one God, one Lord Jesus Christ, and this couldn't be real, what these people are doing. You know, that's their understanding of it, is that it's real, but it really isn't. And we know better, we could be objective. What should we do? So he brings up the concept in 1 Corinthians chapter chapter 10 of the Lord's table in verse 16 and 17, it shows us the significance of it, that we are joined to the Lord in this, that we're one bread, one body, and so on. And then he says, verse 19, what say I then? That the idol is anything, or that which is sacrificed to an idol is anything? No, they're nothing. But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, or the goyim, or the heathen, they sacrifice to demons and not to theos, not to deity. And I would not that you should have fellowship with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and the partaker of the table of demons. Do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? All things are lawful for me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things don't edify. Let no man seek his own, but every man seek another man's welfare. Whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat, asking no conscience or no question for conscience sake. In other words, if you went to the meat market to buy a hunk of beef, the hunk of beef that you got would have come from the pagan temple. That's where they sold all this excess meat that they had, in the shambles, in the meat market. That, you knew it was sacrificed to a pagan, or to a pagan idol. But you bought it simply for your own nourishment. Eat it. Don't worry about it. Fine. Go ahead. For conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. He gave you the meat to eat. If any of them that believe not, however, bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat it. Don't ask any question for conscience sake. Don't ask the guy, was this sacrifice to Aphrodite? Just eat. Okay, keep reading. But if any man says to you, this is offered in sacrifice unto idols, which means he sees a religious connotation in the eating. He sees something deeply significant, that you're going to be blessed by this God because you're eating the sacrifice, then you don't eat. See? Eat not for his sake that showed it, and for conscience sake, same reason, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Conscience, I say, not your own, but that of the other. Don't take the liberty to let that guy think for 1 minute that you think that there's something specially significant to that meat because it was sacrificed to an idol. You will mislead him, so you don't eat it. See? You have liberty, but your liberty has to be controlled in terms of the benefit that it's going to bring to others. Now, the point that he's making, however, that I want to make up here is that in the context, beyond the idol that this sacrifice was made to is a demon. And these people who are partaking of that which is sacrificed to the idol are having fellowship with demons. And you can't afford to let that happen in your life. That's the point of the paragraph. Okay. So what we're saying then, in effect, simply is this. The occult side of pagan worship, which would include the whole concept of their priesthood, was demonic. Okay? Hence, forbidden to Israel. In other words, wrapped around all of this worship of idols among the Canaanite fertility cults and even among the Babylonian fertility cults and the Greek fertility and cults, was this occult business of the priests. And so we saw in Deuteronomy 18 verses 9 through 14 that the diviners, the augurs, the sorcerers, the charmers, the whole list of these. And so it keeps going on and on and on. The wizards, the medium, the necromancers. These were, you see, the pagan pros. These were the pagan professional religious leaders who interceded with the pagan deities and the demon spirits who inhabited idol temples. They were the go-between between the cosmic counterfeits of God and the people. And so it was forbidden to Israel. Balaam was one of these. Balaam. His real name is Bilam in Hebrew, and we just use the Greek. Balaam was a diviner, which in Hebrew is the word kosim. Joshua chapter 13 and verse 22. Just one more summary note. Point five. Balaam represents. He becomes a example in the New Testament, and he represents those who foster or encourage evil and disobedience to God. He represents those who foster evil and disobedience to God under a guise of piety. They've got the robes on. They got the ministerial garb on. And yet they encourage disobedience to God. And they do it in a religious aura atmosphere. So that you will find in documenting this, among the false teachers, we had this in 2 Peter chapter 2, that Balaam represents, we have mentioned here the way of Balaam. I wanted to get this all on across the line. The way of Balaam. What was the way of Balaam? 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. The way of Balaam was to love the wages of unrighteousness. He had a price tag ministry that catered to the highest bidder. It didn't matter who the highest bidder was. And so he received the wages of unrighteousness, according to Peter. He loved this, the wages of unrighteousness. And in the fact that Balak could not get Balaam to curse Israel, he did get him to do one thing, and he paid him, and he went home. He got him to teach him what to do to get these men to fall. In Jude 11, verse 11, in the same kind of context of Peter, the Peter passage, false teachers in the end times, you will have what is called the error of Balaam. The error of Balaam. What was the error of Balaam? The error of Balaam is very closely associated with this wages of unrighteousness. The same Greek word is used, where he wanted reward. And I think the error of Balaam was that he felt he could play games with God and still get some type of a reward. He felt he could play games with God and still be blessed. The idea would be rewarded. Didn't happen. Lost his life. The third mention of Balaam is Revelation 2:14. All these in the New Testament, and this is called the doctrine of Balaam. So you could build a nice message around these three things.
around the way of Balaam, around the error of Balaam, around the doctrine of Balaam. The doctrine of Balaam was corruption. Corruption of true worship by compromise. Okay? Corruption was moral corruption. Okay? Okay, any questions? Let's try to answer. Again, I'd like to try to repeat the, or try to come at you, just sort of to reinforce the importance of this section. This section covers four chapters. Four chapters out of the book of Numbers, and there's been nothing in Numbers that has occupied that many words or that much space. Spatially, this thing occupies more in Numbers than any other story. So the Holy Spirit felt it was very important to communicate that to us. And I think we can see why, because one of the reasons definitely is that this becomes illustrative of some of the things that's going to happen in end times in terms of false teaching within Christendom. Teachers are going to go the way of Balaam. They're going to make the mistake of the error of Balaam. And they're going to get involved in the doctrine of Balaam. Remember the 2 Peter passage, chapter 2, how it explained the kind of mentality that these people had? It's the doctrine of Balaam. Yeah? Okay. No questions. All right, next week we'll move on. We're going to move through the narrative. I don't think we're going to stop and pick up every chapter because we're going to finish Numbers very, very shortly. Shall we close? Thank you for this opportunity, Father, of studying these things about your people. We're grateful that when your judgment comes upon your own, it is not a judgment of condemnation, it's a judgment of correction. And we're sorry that often human lives have to be taken in order to correct the situation. We're grateful for these men who were taken, these 24,000. We know they belong to you. We know they're yours. We know that you claim them. We pray that the implications of this story will not escape each one of us that is here in Christ's name.